Now, the next section. Oh, I didn't bring my booklet. So this is called Comparing the Material and Spiritual Worlds, Emily. 17 to 22. So Krishna mentioned Brahma in text 16. And Brahmaloka is the place where everyone's shooting to get to through the various yoga processes. Karma, Jnana, and Ashtanga. Right? They're considered quite successful if they get to Brahmaloka, but Krishna's saying that there's no guarantee, and plus you have to come back again, unless you're developing your Ananya Bhakti. So now he's going to describe the temporary nature of the material world so that the devotees can fix their mind only on Mam Upetya, or achieving Krishna, nothing else. That they won't desire to go to any higher planet in the material realm, because they see that it's all temporary. It's all going to be destroyed sooner or later in the cycle of universal time. So he's talking about Brahmaloka, which shows that all of the other planets there are included within this presentation, because Brahmaloka is the topmost planet. So if you can fall from there, you can fall from anywhere. And if you have to die there, then you have to die anywhere. And if that planet itself is going to be destroyed, that means even if you get there, you know, it's not eternal. Sahasra yuga paryantam mahayad brahmano viduhu Ratrim yuga sahasrantam teho ratra vido janaha. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day, and such also is the duration of his night. So all the calculations are in the commentary given by Srila Prabhupada. That we have the day and night is 4 million, right? Is it 4 million? 320,000 years? And the times 1,000, that's 4 billion. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. The yuga, this kalpa or mahayuga is 4,320,000. And times 1,000, sahasra, is one day of Brahma. So then it's 4,320,000,000 years. So that's the day and the night, which are equal. Prabhupada writes in the commentary, elevated sannyasis are promoted to Brahma's particular planet. Right? That's what we were just discussing. Brahmaloka, which is the highest planet, this is at the end of the commentary. Brahmaloka, which is the highest planet in the material universe and which survives all the heavenly planets in the upper strata of the planetary system. But, in due course, Brahma and all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka are subject to death according to the law of material nature. So even the highest place is temporary. Next verse describes his night. Avyaktat vyaktaya sarva prabhavantya har agame rachyagame praliyante tatraiva vyakta sangyake. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state. And thereafter, when the night falls, they are merged into the unmanifest again. The beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that this all living entities refers to the all living entities in the Bhur, Bhuva, and Sva regions of the universe. Because the higher planets, they're not destroyed. From Mahalok onwards, they are retained their position. So, Brahma's night is interesting. And the whole universal situation. This word avyakta means Brahma's night. It doesn't mean the pradhan, as sometimes misunderstood by some scholars. But Baladev and Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur both say that this word avyakta means Brahma's night is being described, not the pradhan. So Brahma's night is described in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there Prabhupada says that all the living entities enter the belly of the Virat Purusha, along with the big oceans, he says. Right? All the big oceans and everything in the lower planets, they all enter into the belly of the Virat Purusha. And Prabhupada says in the next commentary, at night they no longer have bodies, but remain compact in the body of Vishnu. Right? So, and then in the second canto he mentions the Virat Purusha in particular. And in the previous, in the subsequent commentaries, the name of that Virat Purusha, Hiranyagarbha Brahma, is being mentioned. So from what I've seen, it is pointing to that at the end of Brahma's day, when the night comes, the living entities from the Bhur, Bhuva, and Sva planetary systems enter into the belly of the Virat Purusha, who is called Hiranyagarbha Brahma. He is kind of like a form of Vishnu who takes on the body of the universe so that he can train or transfer the knowledge of the universe to Lord Brahma. So Brahma and Vishnu have a kind of conglomerate form whereby Vishnu becomes a universe and Brahma expands and becomes part of that, so that Brahma can understand what's going on in the universe and he can do his job. So that's called Hiranyagarbha Brahma. And this is also described in the Brahma Samhita. So this, from what I can understand from the commentaries, that this is the form at the end of Brahma's day. Living entities go into this is belly of the Virat Purusha, Hiranyagarbha Brahma. So a kind of conglomerate form of Vishnu and Brahma. So this is, but we're not talking about the total annihilation, we're talking about the daily annihilation, partial annihilation of the universe. Only half of the universe is destroyed at that time. In the third canto, it's described 3:11:30, the partial destruction of the universe. Do I have the third canto here? There it's described that sages like Bhrigu, who live in Marhalok, transfer to Janalok. Because of the partial annihilation, there's also fire coming from the mouth of Ananta, from the bottom of the universe for 36,000 years, and then there's water, rain and wind for 36,000 years. But at first there's this fire. So the residents of Marhalok, including Bhrigu, they go in their spaceships and they go up to Janalok because it's too hot in Marhalok. It gets too hot for them. So Janalok's much, much higher, much more northern direction. So they go to the hill station of Marhalok, to cool off during the partial annihilation for 36,000 years, a long summer. And he brings along with the other inhabitants of Marhaloka. They evacuate all of Marhaloka. The whole planet's evacuated. It's interesting. Yeah? They go up to Janaloka. This is described in 3:11:30. You can read it yourself. Prabhupada has mentioned this point. And this belly of the Virat Purusha is mentioned in 2:6:11. You can look that up. He says all of the oceans enter there too. 2:6:11. These are So you can see this. It takes a lot of time to research all of these things. That's what I'm doing in the morning instead of, you know, enjoying the kirtan and looking in all the books. So all the living entities, when Bhrigu goes to, and his company go to Janalok, and they evacuate from Maharlok, then all of the living entities from anything lower from Maharlok, including Indralok and all of the lower demigods, Bhuva, Boor, Sva, they're all annihilated by the fire and then by the water. So all of those living entities with the big oceans enter into this Hiranyagarbha Brahma, into his belly. And there, Prabhupada writes, they're compact there. He said, remain compact. They no longer have bodies. Yeah, subtle, but they have subtle bodies. The mind is remains, right? But no gross body. They remain compact in the body of Vishnu. It's not talking about like Garbhadaksha Vishnu, as far as I understand, or Kshirodaksha, but this Hiranyagarbha, this Virat Purusha, form of Vishnu. And at the... Okay, let's just finish 19. Bhuta grama se evayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratriagame vashaparta prabhavatyahar agame. Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Prabhupada writes, the less intelligent who try to remain within this material world may be elevated to higher planets, and then again must come down to this planet Earth. At the end, he reminds us to... But intelligent persons who take to Krishna consciousness use the human life fully in devotional service to the Lord, chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Thus they transfer themselves even in this life to the spiritual planet of Krishna and become eternally blissful there, not being subject to such rebirths. Haribol. All right, so you can enter Krishna Leela right in this lifetime. Right? Let's just continue and then we can have questions at the end. 20. Parastasmattubhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha yasarsaveshu bhuteshu nashatsuna vinasyati. Yet there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifest and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So here is described the paramam gataha, which was mentioned in verse 15. Right, that supreme destination is now being described. In this commentary, both Vishwanath Chakravarti Baladeva Dibhushan mention Hiranyagarbha Brahma in their commentaries. Prabhupada writes that Krishna's superior energy is completely opposite in quality to material nature. So there is another nature which is not annihilated, which is eternal, which is full of bliss. It's not dukalayam or shashvatam. It's shashvata and adhukalaya or sukalaya, without miseries. So this is the word avyakta is mentioned twice there. It is that unmanifest place. And now, what is that avyakta spoken? It is described in the next verse, 21. Avyakto kshara ityuktas tam ahu paramam gatim yam prapya na nivartante tadhama paramam mama. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. So that what is that avyakta spoken in the last verse? It is the akshara. Right? It is indestructible. That is the place Tadama Paramamama, the Supreme Lord, His abode. That place is also called Avyakta. And the Supreme Lord, He is also called Avyakta. And His Dhamma is my supreme abode. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, he says, my supreme abode is eternal. Akshara Parama Dhamma means that my abode is Brahma, and it possesses an effulgent form. Akshara Parama Dhamma is infallible. Prabhupada writes in his Tika, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives only a small hint of his personal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. And Prabhupada quotes from the Brahma Samhita and gives a very beautiful description of Goloka Vrindavan, how there are Sarabi cows and Chintamani, and there's the beautiful Krishna with a peacock feather playing his flute by the banks of the Jamuna. Like this. Very nice. And he's surrounded by thousands of Lakshmis or Gopis. And he's blowing on his flute. His beauty excels the beauty of thousands of Cupids and so forth. So that is that supreme abode, that unmanifest place. That is the highest abode. So the Ananya Bhaktas, they go to Goloka, either in one of three rooms of Goloka, Vrindavan, Mathura, or Dwarka. They go to such beautiful supreme abode. Of course, they could also go, depending on their mood of love, to Ram Loka in Ayodhya, or Vaikuntha Narayan, worship Lord Narayan. But Prabhupada describes Vrindavan in his commentary. 22. Purusha sa para parta bhaktya labhya stvananyaya yasyanta stanis bhutani yena sarvam midam tatam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although He is present in His abode, He is all-pervading, and everything is situated within Him. So this word ananyaya has the same meaning as ananya cheta given in text 14, that there's no trace of karma, jnana, or yoga, or worldly desires. So the Lord says that this purusha, right, purusha sa para parta, that supreme purusha, my dear Arjuna, is my expansion. So if you have any other desires, you cannot obtain Him. The karmi, the jnani, the yogi cannot obtain Him. And what are the lakshanas of that purusha? It's mentioned, yasyanta stani bhutani, that all beings are in Him, yena sarvam idam tatam, and that He's all-pervading. So, and Prabhupada comments, to enter Krishna's supreme abode or the innumerable Vaikuntha planets is possible only by bhakti, devotional service, as clearly indicated here by the word bhaktya. No other process can help one attain that supreme abode. He thinks of himself as just Krishna. Often. Of course, we understand also, he says in many places that I am that supreme Purusha. I am that supreme Purusha are the same. In many places he mentions it. But he's directed, well, you know, it's like he's talking about the Paramatma. Kshirodakshay Vishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Mahavishnu. Who are also one. So he's referring to that Supreme Lord. He doesn't always say myself, but we know in the other places that he does. In one of the commentators, one of the commentators have mentioned that Krishna tells Arjuna that, Arjuna, you know I spoke about that Supreme Person in the third person, as if I was telling about someone else. But you know already that that Supreme Person is me. We'll get to that. That's coming. I think that was at the end in the last six chapters. Krishna, these things are clarified by our acharyas. And but I think it was right in this chapter he was mentioning that I and the Supreme are the same. Which verse was that? Huh? Previous verse. No. In the beginning, I think, of the chapter, he was saying that. He used the word eka, ekastam, or... Yeah, in text 7, he's saying, and 8. But there was something that I was looking for. I just can't find it right now. Oh, it was in text 4. He said, Adiyogya hum evatra. I am the Adiyogya. And I, the Supreme Lord, represented as the Supersoul in the heart, am called the Adiyogya. Just like when Arjuna and Krishna go on the chariot to Mahavishnu Loka, then Krishna bows down, right, to Mahavishnu, right? And he's, right, so he sees Mahavishnu as like the Lord, you know. You know, there's some difference, and they're the same, but there's also some difference. So there's also a difference in the mentality. There's a kind of mix of Aishwarya and Madhurya also in Krishna and Arjuna's relationship. So sometimes Krishna allows Arjuna to think of Narayan as God, and then sometimes he reminds him that I'm that Narayan, by the way. But I'm also your friend. It's kind of a thing, this kind of rasa. Yes, you had a question? But there's also a real form. I mean, it's imaginary, but it's also real. Imaginary in the sense that the planets aren't actually his lower, you know, feet and so forth. They're actually planets. They're not his feet. But because his body expands, include all of those things. I mean, that's the prime purpose why Vishnu expands and that Virat Purusha, so that he can kind of take on the body of the universe and then transfer that knowledge to Brahma, so that Lord Brahma knows how to do all of that. Because otherwise, how can one living entity be conscious of everything in the universe and all entities and all creations and all planets? And it's just too much. So there is a form of Vishnu like this. But it's not that his head is the planet. It's just that he kind of expands in the subtle form. And Brahma expands also in this way. It's a little bit too subtle to even explain. I mean, as far as I understand it, I am explaining it in English words. It's a form of Brahma that it's actually Vishnu. For the creation. In one sense, it's imaginary because, as I said, the planets are actually real. But there is a Virat Purusha. Here it said what? Rays of Madhurya. Range of Madhurya. You mean in Goloka? It's the highest of Vaikuntha planets because there's more intimacy or rasa in the Ayodhya than in the Vaikuntha planets. But there's also other planets too. Like there's this Krishna Vaikuntha. There's a place like at that same region, at the bottom of Goloka or the top of Vaikuntha, where there's Radha and Krishna planet. which is different from the highest planet of Radha and Krishna, where people who are devotees who are attracted to Radha and Krishna worship, but who don't follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan in Ragamarg, then they go to that place. And there's Jamuna and Govardhan, and there's coward boys, and there's gopis. But they worship Radha and Krishna something like a king and queen. They're married. Yeah. So that's also another place. And in this material world, there's also a place called Rama Priya. Other than the Shishumar, this Dhruva Loka, the pole star, which is a spiritual planet, and there's also the Rama Priya. That's another place, a spiritual planet in the material universe. So it seems that after some time they'll have to make another picture, and they'll have to put in all these other places. There's more than just that. Yeah. But Ayodhya is very high. Because in Ayodhya, there's the kind of Gaurava Sakya. There's Lord Ram has some friends, and he has parents. But Lord Vishnu doesn't have any parents, right? You never see a picture of baby Vishnu being cuddled by his mother, you know, sucking on the breasts of his mama. Right, but Ram has his mama, and his papa, Dasarath, you know, and Sita Devi is a little bit more intimate than Lakshmi Devi, and Hanuman, although the servants of Vishnu, they never got an embrace from Lord Vishnu, but Hanuman got it. Embraced by Lord Ram in Ayodhya. But that's like the pinnacle of rasa there. So, yeah, it's some special compared to the Vaikunthas. It's considered the best. We're not going to stop now. The next section continues discussing this same theme. Yeah, I just heard actually. Let me get back to you tomorrow with that one, because I remember something about this. There's some misconception about this place. Yeah, I know. No, I'm thinking about some. I have some references from the Bhagavatam and statements by Prabhupada about Pitriloka. I just want to check that before I try to answer the question. Yeah. All right. But let us continue and try to finish this, yes? I've never read that there's such place. Buddha is a jiva. Anyway, in any case. And I can't imagine that Parshuram has his own loka. I didn't know what is the purpose of, right? So he's the avatar of Vishnu. So he just becomes Vishnu with four hands. Like that. Because he's, you know, in the spiritual world, he's not going to be cutting people up with his chopper. So there's no need, you know. Okay, let's continue, please, gentlemen. Yatra kale tana vrityam avritim chayva yoginaha prayata yante tam kalam vakshyami bharatarshaba. O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which, passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. I was just looking at this verse. You can see how Sanskrit can be easily manipulated. Yatra kale tvanavritim. You can say, at the time of going on yatra, right, those who they don't come back. Right? And those who return, they are real yogis. If you come back from the yatra, then like this. Can make all kinds of interesting statements. So, up till now, how someone comes to him, how someone comes to Krishna has been described. Because Arjuna asked that, how can one come to you at the time of death? But now, here we see that some leave the body, they go to Svarga or some higher planet, and then they return. So this is not exactly on Arjuna's precise question, but it's closely related. Because it's kind of like a negative reflection of answering the question. How can one come to Krishna and remember him at the time of death? Not in these ways. Right? Not by these other yoga systems. And Krishna describes the system, that mainly what happens, what is the result of these other systems. Prabhupada comments, the unalloyed devotees of the Supreme Lord who are totally surrendered souls do not care when they leave their bodies or by what method. They leave everything in Krishna's hands and so easily and happily return to Godhead. Prabhupada always makes everything so simple, right, and peaceful, right? It's so nice. But there's so much detailed information about this section. Prabhupada writes, according to Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushan, the Sanskrit word kala used herein refers to the presiding deity of time. It doesn't just mean time, because every time, or like the day, the fortnight, the month, the year, they have presiding deities. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan, I looked in this commentary, so Baladeva Vidyabhushan says that because each time has a deity. And he asks, why do I say this? He says, because Krishna will say fire and smoke in the subsequent verse. And this fire and smoke, which have nothing to do with time. So it's because there's presiding deities of fire and smoke. Dhuma. Ratri. And whatever. So, he says, therefore I say that this word kala means the presiding deity of time, not just time. So Krishna is going to explain. Now he gives the first path. This path is called Devayana, the path of the jnanis, jnana yogis. And it's described in other places in the Bhagavatam. Agnir Jyotir Aha Shukla Shanmasa Uttarayanam Tatra Prayata Gacchanti Brahma Brahma Vido Janaha. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery God in the light and an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. So Prabhupada also writes that when it is fire, light, day, or moon are mentioned, it's understood that over all of them are various presiding deities who make arrangements for the passage of the soul. So there's like a whole system of the yogi, how he's passed from one deity to the next, as he goes through the various layers of the universe to go to the Brahman, the part of Yom, then there are different areas, and those areas have deities. And the deity accepts this yogi and then passes him on up to the next stage, and the next deity accepts him and then passes him and kind of escorts him up to the next stage. And then the next deity brings him up, and in this way he's kind of like escorted out of the universe by the various universal deities. There's a whole elaborate system described in the Chandogya Upanishad, which is not being mentioned here. But here Krishna is just summarizing this system. So this is called Devayana. That's when the person attains liberation, the Jnani Yogi goes to the Brahmajyoti by the mercy of all of these presiding deities. So Prabhupada also writes, if one leaves the body at the time designated above, either accidentally or by arrangement, it is possible for him to attain the impersonal Brahmajyoti. So sometimes devotees, they wonder, oh, well, you know, if some guy in the hospital just, you know, dies at that time, does he go to the Brahmajyoti? Because since Prabhupada says either accidentally or by arrangement, right? But here it's talking about Brahma Vidha, those who know Brahma, right? Those the Brahma Jnanis, not just any guy off the street who dies at this time. Right? So there's some qualification. So when they said Agni and Jyoti, it's referring to the deva of Archie, or the deva of the sun rays. Archie means sun rays, and there's a deity of that. So when this word Agni, Jyoti, the first words here, refer to Archie. Archie is being indicated here. So there's many stations and stages and stations here described. And in the Chandogya Upanishad, it mentions the first station is Archi, and then Aha, which means the day, the deity of the daytime. Then the bright fortnight, Shukla. Right? Then San Masha Uttarayana. Then there's the deity of those 6 months, the Uttarayana. And then he continues, he says that there's the deity of the year. Then there's Surya, comes to Aditya or Surya, Dev. And then to Chandralok, to the moon. And then to Brahmalok. So when he goes to Brahmaloka, then he doesn't come back again. Now remember that this was the path that Bhishma had taken when he was lying on the Kurukshetra battlefield after the war, which ended in the beginning of January sometime. He stayed there for like 2 more months, or maybe even 3 months, till the end of March. That is when the sun takes a different course and it enters into the northern part of the sky. In the west, that's when they turn the clocks back for the springtime at that time. So Bhishma was lying on his bed of arrows for that he was retaining his life within his body for this like 2 or 3 months, waiting for that Uttarayana, when the sun changes the course into the northern sky, which is the summertime. Because he knew that this is the auspicious time to leave the body. And then he'll be escorted by all of these presiding deities of and out of the universe. That was his intention. Of course, he was a pure devotee, so he wasn't dependent upon the system. But he, out of humility, thought that he should follow this, because he thought that I'm not really a devotee. That's why he waited. But the real meaning of that is that he wasn't waiting for Uttarayana, the time, but he was waiting for Uttarayana, Krishna, who had taken shelter of Uttara's womb to protect his devotee Parikshit. So Krishna is also called Uttarayana. So Yudhisthira and the Pandavas return to Kurukshetra battlefield. Right, Krishna. So the Pandavas with Krishna, and it was Bhishma was waiting for that Uttarayana. That is the actual meaning of his waiting, because he was waiting for to see Krishna. So then, when he saw Krishna, he took Krishna within his heart, and then he left this world. And all the demigods came, and they were showering flowers from the sky. So then we have a few more verses here. This is very technical subject matter. So if you're feeling a little tired, just for 1 minute, if you can just stand up, raise your hands into the air as high as you can reach them, stretch, you know, try to touch the ceiling, and he stays there for 10,000 years, Prabhupada writes. Gradually he comes back again. This is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, these paths of Pitriyana and Devayana in the 7th canto and in the 2nd canto. The 7th canto gives a description, 7:15. In the 15th chapter of the 7th canto. Here we go. Can I read it to you? You won't fall asleep. It's just about 3 or 4 verses, okay? My dear King Yudhisthira, when oblations of ghee and food, grains like barley and sesame, are offered in sacrifice, they turn into celestial smoke, which carries one to successively higher planetary systems like the kingdoms of Duma, Ratri, Krishnapaksha, Dakshinam, and ultimately the moon. Then, however, the performers of sacrifice descend again to earth to become herbs, creepers, vegetables, and food grains. These are eaten by living entities and turned to salmon, which is injected into female bodies. Thus one takes birth again and again. Sounds familiar, right? We already discussed this, and the theme is continuing. Prabhupada describes the difference between pravritti and navritti mark. Next verse. Oh, that was text number 50 and 51. 7th canto, chapter 15. 50 and 51. I'll read the Sanskrit too. Dravya sukshma vipakascha dhumo ratriya pakshaya ayanam dakshinam somo darsha oshadi viruda annam reta iti kshmesha pitriyanam punarbhavaha pitriyanam eka shena nu purvam bhutva bhutveha jayate. Very similar, right? As the Gita. Now I'm going to skip one verse and go to 53. I'll just read the translation. The mind is always agitated by waves of acceptance and rejection. Therefore, all the activities of the senses should be offered into the mind, which should be offered into one's words. Then one's words should be offered into the aggregate of all alphabets, which should be offered into the concise form Omkar. Omkar should be then offered into the point Bindu, and Bindu into the vibration of sound, and that vibration into the life air. Then the living entity, who is all that remains, should be placed in Brahman, the Supreme. This is the process of sacrifice. Next verse. Agni Suryo Diva Prana Shuklo Rakko Taram Swarat Vishvata Taijasa Pragyas Turya Atma Samanvayat. On this path of ascent, the progressive living entity enters the different worlds of fire, the sun, the day, the end of the day, the bright fortnight, the full moon, and the passing of the sun in the north, along with their presiding demigods. When he enters Brahmaloka, he enjoys life for many millions of years. And finally, his material designations comes to an end. He then comes to a subtle designation from which he attains the causal designation, witnessing all previous states. Upon the annihilation of this causal state, he attains his pure state, in which he identifies with the Supersoul. In this way, the living entity becomes transcendental. This is the path of Devayana, or the Brahmagyanis, right? Path of Jnana. Devayanam idam prahur bhutva bhutvanu purvasha atma yajyu yupashantatma hyatmasto nani vartate. This gradual process of elevation for self-realization is meant for those who are truly aware of the Absolute Truth. After repeated birth on this path, which is known as Devayana, one attains these consecutive stages. One who is completely free from all material desires, being situated in the self, need not traverse the path of repeated birth and death. Next verse. Ya eta pitra devanam ayane veda nirmate shastrena chakshusha veda janasto pinam huyati. Even though situated in the material body, one who is fully aware of the paths known as Pitrayana and Devayana, and who thus opens his eyes in terms of Vedic knowledge, is never bewildered in this material world. Right? So Krishna is trying to open our eyes to show us the different paths, basically of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And this is the general paths which are practiced by followers of the Vedas. But the path of bhakti is much higher, and that is the whole purpose of this section of the Gita. Describe. What else do we have to? There's also reference in 2.2.24, in the second canto, 2.2.24, of this same thing. And it's also mentioned in the 8th canto, 8.5.36. We won't read them because they just say the same thing. But you can see that these two paths are found throughout the Vedas, in the Bhagavad Purana and other Puranas. And it's described in the Upanishads too, in the Shrutis, in Chandogya Upanishad. Let's finish before we ask. Get questions, all right? There's just three verses left. 26. Shukla Krishne Katiryete Jagata Shashvate Mate Ekaya Yatyana Vritim Anaya Vartate Punaha. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness, right? The one in light is Devayana. And in darkness, Pitrayana. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when he passes in darkness, he returns. Prabhupada quotes the exact section from the Chandogya Upanishad. It's the 5th canto, the 10th chapter. See, Baladeva Dibhushan, he's the one who gives this in his commentary. Prabhupada quotes from him. He says, those who are fruitive laborers, right, karma yogis, and philosophical speculators, jnana yogis, from time immemorial, are constantly going and coming on this path of Pitrayana and Devayana, up and down the universe. It's like the highway of the universe. Nowadays, the highway is pretty much empty because very few people are going up. Few coming down, maybe. Hardly anyone's going there. Actually, they do not attain ultimate salvation, for they do not surrender to Krishna. So our definition, muktvir hitvanyata rupam, swarupena vyavastiti. That is what we, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, have based upon the Bhagavad Purana. That is mukti. When there's no more misconception, when you give up, muktvir hitvanyata anyata rupa, right? Any other abhiman or misconception of the self, any other designation, Sarupena, when you actually attain your Vastu city, right? When you get your, or Sarup city, your eternal constitutional position, your eternal form, that we call liberation. To get that, you have to have prema. And to get prema, you need pure devotion. So Shashvate here means that there are two eternal paths in this world. Right? Because these paths are eternally present in the material world. Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. So they're called Shukshla Paksha, that is the Devayana or the Jnana Yoga path, and Krishna Paksha, that is the Pitrayana or the Karma Yoga path. Unfortunately here, Krishna is the lower path. Krishna means dark, the darker path. But we know that the Krishna Bhakti path is far beyond both of these two. So. Some, you know, Vedic scholars may say, yes, but you Krishna devotees are taking the lower path because this is the Krishna Paksha. Right? They may try to twist you around with that one. But don't fall for that. They say the here Krishna just means dark path. But Krishna, son of Nanda, that's a different Krishna. They call him Krishna because he's dark, because he is Shyam, Shyam Sundar. So Krishna mentions both of these paths. Why? Because by knowing then, one develops discrimination. And he naturally would choose the path, the best path, which is Nivritti Marg. Not the path of Jnana, but he renounces this world. So those who know this are intelligent, and then one would at least determine himself not to engage in the path of karma to try to get some higher planet. Right. Okay, 27. Nayate sriti parta janan yogi muyati kaschana tasmat saveshu kaleshu yoga yukto bhavarjana. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. Yogi muyanti. Na muyanti. At any time. Krishna is advising Arjuna that he should not be disturbed by the different paths the soul can take when leaving the world. A devotee should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or accident. He should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness is to be always dovetailed in his service, and this will make one's path to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain, and direct. Yoga Yukta is significant here. One who is firm in yoga is constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness in all his activities. Therefore, the devotee is not disturbed by these descriptions. Why? Because he knows that his passage to the supreme abode is guaranteed by devotional service. Okay, now last verse. Vedeshu yagyeshu tapasu chaiva daneshu yat punya phalam padishtam atyate tat sarvam idam viriva yogi param sthanam upadhi chadyam. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austere sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. So in this chapter, the supremacy of the Ananya Bhaktis is described and has been firmly established by Lord Krishna. And this word, atyeti tat sarvam, that he surpasses all of that, is referring to all of the previous statements. So one who is the Ananya Bhakta, the Bhakti Yogi, he attains a superior place which is eternal and transcendental. Prabhupada said this verse is the summation of the 7th and 8th chapters. Right, why? Because if you go all the way back to the end of the 6th chapter, you see that Krishna said that the yogi is better than the karmi, the jnani, or the tapasvi. And of all yogis, the one who worships me with devotion is the best. So now he's stated that, but now he's proved how that is true by making these statements. By showing why? That because the devotee, he gets every result of the karma yogi and jnani yogi. And more. Acheti tat sarvam idam viridva. So someone should know that and then become fixed in devotion. Yogi param stanam upaydi chanyam. He attains that highest abode of mind. So Prabhupada describes the whole Vedic scenario about the brahmachari begging, and then he becomes a man of perfect character. He studied the Vedas. He becomes a vanaprastha, right? And then sannyas. And he talks about Brahmajyoti, Vaikuntha, and Krishna Loka. This is path outlined by the Vedas. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life. So this is the usual Vedic scenario, which is the karma and jnana paths, which include Varnashram Dharma. Like we said, if you're a Pakakarmi in Varnashram Dharma, you can go to Brahmaloka. If you're a Pakagyani, you can also go. And devotees can also go there. But what devotee is a pure devotee, then he can go far beyond Brahmaloka to Goloka Vrindavan. Now, Prabhupada, I will read the last bit of Prabhupada's commentary, the last two paragraphs. The words idang viridva indicate that one should understand the instructions given by Sri Krishna in this chapter and the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Again, he's linking the two chapters together as if one chapter, because it's very much closely related. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapters 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first six and last six chapters are like coverings for the middle six chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially these middle six chapters, in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penances, sacrifices, charities, speculation, etc. For one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. Very nice summary of the whole Gita there. One who has a little faith in the Gita should learn Gita from a devotee, because in the beginning of the fourth chapter it is stated clearly that the Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and finally gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancement in the association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service, and this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna or God, and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, name, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Gita and attains a state of feeling always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. This highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. Srila Prabhupada ki. Wow, what a great commentator. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that in this ninth chapter, Krishna explains his opulences. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading the ninth chapter. Yes, I thought that was a summary. Okay. So, Prabhupada has summarized this eighth chapter. And in context with the whole Gita. And he describes how the Ananya Bhakta rises above the usual Vedic scenarios, which is the two paths of Pitriyana and Devayana. And one who's an Ananya Bhakta, he gets all of those results, plus much, much more. And he goes to the supreme abode, Goloka Vrindavan. So this is how Krishna is proving what he said Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana bhajate. Sharavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamamata. This is my opinion. But now Krishna has proven what he said at the end of the sixth chapter by going through this whole thing describing these paths. All right, any last questions? Yes, you can see it like that. Such a long time that it's not in anyone's lifetime. They'll never see him come back. And it's also possible, but very rare, that from Brahma Jyoti one can go to Vaikuntha. Prabhupada writes in his commentary to the Bhagavatam that it's very, very rare, but it's still possible. So even when one is in Brahma Jyoti, he can still go to Vaikuntha. It's possible. And in any way, it's such a long time, like billions and billions of years. I mean, perhaps many lifetimes of Brahma. He can hang around in the Brahma Jyoti. But if he's fortunate, somehow he'll get in contact with devotee like Narada Muni or Mahadev chanting some, you know, bhakti rasayana shlokas. And then they, right? Because there's sometimes they come through the Brahma Jyoti from Vaikuntha or from Mahadev's abode. And sometimes the jivas may catch some of that, you know, kirtan. They may get some bhakti from this, hearing this kirtan. It's possible. No, they're more fallen than us because they don't even have material bodies. So Mahadev may adopt them if they're willing to serve him. They also have to be willing to serve him. But, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's described that in the part of Yom, there's Sadashiva Loka, where Mahadev is there, and he has his devotees there, and they're serving him. So it's an eternal situation. It's a liberated position. But it's not the same, because he's not the Vishaya. And so there's no prema. So, even they go to such a high place, it's not anywhere near the same amount of bliss, and there's no prema there. So for us, we reject this. So you may think that they, you know, okay, they get some mercy, but it's not the same mercy we get. And not only that, but it's not that every Buddha and Preta and Hobgoblin, you know, becomes an associate of Mahadev. That's because this Antariksha is just filled with it. I mean, there's thousands, millions, billions of ghosts just flying everywhere. And they come down at that at certain times. Some of them, you know, somehow get hooked up with, you know, Lord Shiva, but they have to surrender to him. And a lot of them, they don't want to surrender to anyone. But still there's some surrender. Yeah. So they get benefit. Other than, more than that, I cannot say. Something else? Yes? Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No, we should desire only to love Krishna and serve him. And we should be willing to take another birth if need be. In other words, for our own convenience and pleasure, we should not desire to finish this samsara. But to save our guru from coming back, then we should try to. That is guru bhakti. And even higher or equal to that is to just develop love for Krishna. And then just allow Krishna that you just take me wherever you want me. But please don't let me forget you, and please help me develop my love for you. So if we have prema bhakti, it doesn't matter if we take birth again or not. Because you'll just be floating in ecstasy. You may, who knows, we appear again, but if we have prema, then it doesn't really matter where you are. So that's the main thing for us to concentrate on. Not leaving and another birth, or yes or no. For us, we don't care. Maybe for our guru's sake, let's try to finish this. But not for our own convenience and pleasure. Something else? Yes, Chaitanya, China. I believe it's just these lower planets. The higher planets are not affected by this. Mahalok, Janalok, those are Siddha. Those are, you know, these persons are Siddha Purusha. So there's no effect of Kali there. In those, there's no, they're above the modes of nature. That's why they're called Mukta Purusha. They're liberated from the modes of nature. The only business in those higher planets is just bhajan, meditation on the Supreme, in one form or another. So there, Kali has no reign. Because they're just so, you know, Siddha Purushas, Mukta Purushas. Yes. I told what? Pitriyana and Devayana. But that's prasadam, that's not just feeding people, that's different. They give to devotees, then they're engaged in some process of bhakti, which we'll talk about in the 12th chapter. Then it's not on the level of karma. There's, because they're, you know, their money is going to offer the Lord some bhoga, and it becomes prasadam, and then they help to distribute the prasadam that's on the path of bhakti. Then they get a much, much higher benefit than these karma yogis. They'll go far beyond the moon planet. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop now. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. So, I don't know, we'll try to have a class tonight. At 5 o'clock. Huh? 5 o'clock till maybe 6:30. But I'll only do like maybe one or two sections of chapter 9, if possible. We'll try to do that.